Recording in progress.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Alameda County Board of Supervisors Personnel Administration and Legislation Committee for Monday, July the 21st, 2025. May I have roll call, please?
Supervisor Fortunato Bass.
Present.
Supervisor Tam.
Present. Thank you. Let's move directly into our federal legislation update.
Good afternoon. You've got Emily Baque da Silva here and John Asini with CJ Lake. As far as the schedule, both the House and Senate are in session this week. The House, this week is supposed to be the last week that the House is in session before the August recess. And so as of now, they will be in session through this Thursday, and then they won't return until after Labor Day. As of now, the Senate is scheduled to be in session next week and then adjourn for the August recess again to return the week of Labor Day. Just one quick note, President Trump is putting some pressure on the Senate to remain in session during August. He wants them to focus on confirming more of his nominees. We haven't heard yet whether Senate leadership will decide to keep them in a little bit longer. Usually, you know, they take the full August recess, but there have been times before where they've given back at least the first week or so. So we'll see how that plays out. When we talked last week, the Senate was focused on taking up a rescissions package, and it needed to be done before this past Friday in order for it to be enacted. Ultimately, it did pass. It's about $9 billion in terms of FY25 rescissions. And so, you know, one of the things Republicans wanted to do was to codify some of the DOGE cuts from earlier this year. A number of it focused on NPR stations. There was some concern about PEPFAR. And so that was one of the things that changed when Senate Republicans took up the bill. There was a proposed $400 million cut to PEPFAR. And so that was reinstated. The bill was signed by President Trump. You know, one of the things that we talked about with you all is that this could be the first of several rescissions packages. This was a pretty small one in the scheme of things. And there's talk that OMB may put forward other packages soon. You know, I think when we were on last week, we talked about the strain that this could put on the bipartisan appropriations process, particularly in the Senate, because as we've talked about, you know, spending bills or even continuing resolutions cannot pass the Senate without Democratic support due to the filibuster. So you've got to find 60 votes. However, a rescissions package can be passed with a simple majority and is not the subject to filibuster. And that undermines the bipartisan spending agreement. So, you know, there is a concern that Senate Democrats may be less willing to negotiate on appropriations bills moving forward if they can't get assurances from Senate Republicans that they'll just continue to take up rescissions packages. So basically whatever they agree to in any given year won't really matter if they're going to come back with rescissions packages. So, you know, we've talked about how this could kind of impact the FY26 appropriations process as it gets underway. And John, I'll kick it to you to kind of talk about what's happening with appropriations and what these impacts could be.
So appropriations is complicated this go around because of this rescissions package and sort of the overall, I would say, diminishment of power that Congress has been suffering over the past couple of months. traditionally, or as we've seen in years past, the House will report and try to pass their a number of appropriations bills before the Senate starts to take action, and then the Senate will then take up their appropriations bill later in the year. However, this year, Senate Appropriations Committee Chair Susan Collins has been working on a bipartisan basis to get so far four bills out of committee. tomorrow, they are likely to start the process to pass the Milcon VA appropriations bill, and they may tie in the ag, FDA, and ledge branch bill as the first minibus to pass the Senate floor. They will not be taking up the CJS bill because of this ongoing issue with the location of the FBI headquarters, but that bill has already passed out of committee after a lot of drama over the past 2 weeks. And this will set up the Senate position, which is, of course, a bipartisan position versus that of the House, which is a partisan position with very few Democrats, if any, voting for those bills on the floor. To Emily's point, in the event that the White House sends a rescissions package 45 days prior to the end of the fiscal year, which is September 30th of this year, they could potentially what's called do a pocket rescission, which is hold that funding until before the end of the next fiscal year, essentially impounding that money until Congress is able to provide a response to that. This is something that has been discussed by Russ Vought, obviously very strongly opposed by Senator Collins, and has been sort of, I'll say, poo-pooed by a committee chair, Tom Cole in the House side, but not necessarily opposed outright. Mr. Cole has been a lot more flexible with the White House than Senator Collins has, but that's because he's able to pass his bills on a partisan nature, while Senator Collins has to pass them on a bipartisan nature. So this is all sort of the background that we're going to be dealing with when Congress comes back from the August recess in September, and then the run-up to the CR, which expires on September 30th. And then sort of on top of the sort of procedural questions about rescissions and the ability for Congress to come to a top-line agreement, there's also the questions that Senate Democrats have to ask themselves about whether or not they trust Republicans to even engage in a bipartisan process and hold that agreement towards however long they extend the CR for. And they also had a lot of questions about whether or not they should have voted for the CR in March of this year, seeing how the Trump administration has used that funding and then in many cases tried to impound that funding. So as it stands right now, the Senate Democrats are not saying out loud that they are pushing for a government shutdown because they don't want to be necessarily blamed for one. But it is unclear whether or not we'll be able to get a continuing resolution past the September 30th deadline as it stands right now. Tomorrow's vote on the Senate minibus is going to be an interesting test case about how many Democrats are going to vote for it, if any at all, or if they kill the bill on the floor due to concerns that Senate Republicans voted for the rescissions package last week. So it's a new scheme that we're kind of dealing with right now in appropriations that could potentially see a diminishment of minority control or minority input in the overall appropriations process.
And I would say that's really our report this week. I mean, it's focused on, you know, appropriations bills as they're moving forward. So not much other action is going to occur this week.
Thank you for that update. Supervisor Fortunato Bass, questions, comments?
No major questions or comments. Thank you for the report. And I think, John, you mentioned what I'm very concerned about, which is Congress relinquishing their power, really, with the latest rescission and potentially future rescissions. That's of great concern. Obviously, we have limited impact here at the county, but I think it's definitely worth noting because it's just very unfortunate in terms of the checks and balances of our federal government.
Thank you for that report as well. Just a couple of observations. It sounds like the divisions, particularly the partisanship, is sharper right now in terms of the divide. And I know Senator Collins was one of the ones that did not support H.R. 1, the Big Beautiful Bill. So, and I know that the president has asked practically everyone to stay in town because he may need them. What exactly is critical for President Trump in terms of an action that he needs from the legislature, from the Senate in August?
He wants to push through the remainder of his nominations because, despite the fact that they have a number of their cabinet nominees, there's also a lot of sub-cabinet secretaries, deputy secretaries, assistant administrators, assistant secretaries, and then a whole slew of State Department confirmations that have yet to go through the floor. The House or the Senate Foreign Relations Committee has reported a significant amount of their nominations through committee. Jim Risch has been very successful in pushing the nominees through committee, but they have not yet seen floor action. So you have a significant number of ambassadors that have yet to see action or other national security folks in the State Department that have yet to be confirmed, deputy assistant secretaries, rather, things of that nature. So Trump is putting the screws on Leader Thune to get those confirmed. However, the Senate has been going a lot this year. They have been in session nearly every week, with the exception of the critical holidays. The 4th of July holiday that was supposed to be a recess was taken away because of their action on H.R. 1. The House has had a number of recesses that the Senate did not participate in. And to have the August recess taken away is something that I don't believe that the senators are going to be terribly excited about, just to get nominations done, because they're not going to be legislating and they would rather go back home and hear about their actions about on H.R. 1 and try to sell that back home. And there are a number of senators that are running for governor that are leaving the Senate, that are running for re-election, and they don't necessarily want to spend that time in Washington, D.C. doing procedural votes and churning through State Department nominations. You know, that's not necessarily a critical action that requires the Senate to stay in session.
Okay, that's helpful. So it's all around the nominations and the confirmation, and not so much what Senator Collins' Appropriation Committee would need to advance or not, sounds like.
Yeah, Senator Collins is not going to be pushing or charging ahead on her appropriations bills and requiring her colleagues to stay in D.C. for August. I don't think that she will have her fingerprints all over that at all.
Okay, I appreciate that. Some small saving grace. So thank you very much. Are there any public comments on our federal legislative update?
We have no speakers on this item.
Okay, thank you both. Let's move to the state legislation and how's things looking in Sacramento.
Good afternoon, Supervisors. Jael Dantas with Full Moon Strategies here to provide an overview on your California legislature. Starting with the recap of the legislative process, this past week on Friday, the legislature adjourned for the start of the four-week summer recess. Lawmakers will return on August 18th to begin the final stretch of the 2025 legislative session, which ends on September 12th. Friday also marked a very important deadline for the California legislature, which was the last day for policy committees to hear and advance bills before the break. From August 18th until September, we will have a floor votes, fiscal discussions, and the final negotiations. Last week, we also heard in response of the Texas Republicans redistricting plan backed by President Donald Trump, Gavin Newsom proposed to California to redraw the maps to increase the Democratic representation. He says that California could have potentially add up to 7 more Democratic congressional seats. Currently, Democrats hold 43 out of the 52 seats. This idea challenged the California redistricting process, which is currently ran by the Citizen Commission, established by voters back in 2010. Newsom suggested circumventing the commission through a referendum or legislative action. Are there some oppositions to the idea, including some with the Democratic Party, saying that this move could undermine public trust and set a very dangerous precedent? We don't have any other guidance of what is going to be the vehicle that the governor or the legislature would have tried to use for that, but we will make sure to keep the county updated. Keeping on the theme of the California fighting for fighting some of the federal actions, the California Attorney General Rob Bonta filed an amicus brief with the 20 other states, defending legal service to unaccompanied immigrant children in California. This case challenged the Trump-era decision to cut federal funding for legal representation of this youth. In 2024, over 10,800 unaccompanied minors were placed with the sponsors in California. That gives an average of 11% of the national total, second only by Texas. Alameda County took a very early action addressing to this issue, supporting AB 1261 by Assemblymember Bonta. That bill requires the Department of Social Services to contract with a nonprofit and the public defenders to ensure that these children have a legal counsel during the immigration proceedings. We also testified on AB 1261, expressing the need for early and social support for these minors. On the same issue, Alameda County supported SB 48 by Senator Gonzalez. This bill looks to protect the school sites from immigration enforcement and limits the sharing student information with the federal agencies. The hearing last week was postponed by the author request, but given the urgency clause on the bill, this bill is exempt from regular deadlines and they still have a chance to move forward after summer recess. This morning, we also heard from Attorney General Rob Bonta in a press release. Bonta is leading a coalition with the 14 other attorney generals to oppose the Department of Agriculture proposal to collect and share private data from SNAP recipients. On his press release, the attorney general said that this is an invasion of a privacy, it's unnecessary, and a break federal laws. Bonta also addressed the SNAP fraud is already pretty low, and the program should have focused on fighting hunger and not surveillance. And we have a looking ahead actually of the 2026 elections, which we are starting having some conversations and a hearing up here in Sacramento about some pollings. Some recent pollings show Vice President Kamala Harris leading if she decides to run. She currently polls around 40% in early matchups. One of the results of the polling also shows if Vice President Harris doesn't run, Katie Porter, former U.S. representative, her support base would increase and that she would take the lead among the Democrats. Republicans like Chad Bianco and Steve Hilton are framing her candidacy as a national ideology fight. They say that they hope if Kamala Harris are going to run, that's going to energize their base. But it's still California leans heavily on the Democratic and the GOP candidates will face a very strong uphill battle. Many voters still undecided. It's still very early. It's great to share that. We all are very uncertain that whether Harris is going to run or not, this is just the beginning and we probably will have more data and more pollings and we will make sure to share it with the county as well. Just on the candidates, currently we have 15 candidates running for the gubernatorial race in 2026. We have names such as Tony Atkins, former Senate Pro Tem and Assembly Speaker, Javier Becerra, former U.S. Secretary for HHS, Elaine Kunalakis, current Lieutenant Governor for California, Katie Porter, former U.S. Representative, Betty Yee, former State Controller, a few other Republican candidates, and a non-party preference. For sure, we will have more developments, and we will keep the county updated. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. And we will be submitting our report right after this meeting.
Thank you for that update. Supervisor Fortunato Bass, questions, comments?
Thank you. Two questions. Firstly, from the report, it doesn't sound like there will be any emergency session over the summer. Are you hearing any talk of a special session in order to deal with the impacts of the federal budget at the state level. And of course, that trickles down to us here at the county.
Yeah, most likely what we are hearing on the Senate side, actually, is that a potential special session would be called by the return on August 12th. So we are having conversations with our associations right now during the break to actually see if anybody have any information on this, but we don't have specifically dates on when the special session would be called or for sure if we were going to have a special session this year.
Thank you. And then my next question is actually for both sets of our lobbyists. There has been a lot of attention to ICE agents or those who are deputized as ICE agents being masked or not having any identifying clothing or name badges. I am curious to hear how legislation is moving forward, both at the federal level, obviously it's an uphill battle there, and also the state level in terms of requiring law enforcement to be unmasked.
I would just start on the California level. This is a big concern, especially with the Latino caucus. We are seeing some movements from the legislature to ensure that in this raids on ICE, they would be required, for example, to show their face and to have an identification. Supervisor, this is a big concern right now for the California legislature. And I'm happy also to add a few more guidance on and what is happening on the state level on our report.
Thank you.
And as far as Congress, I haven't heard of any legislation that has been introduced yet. And certainly it would be an uphill battle to have anything move. But John, I don't know if you've seen anything.
I'm sure that there's been legislation that's been introduced by Democrats to prohibit the masking of ICE agents. A couple years ago, there was similar legislation that would prohibit ICE from using the word police on their uniform. So there is precedent from Congress to kind of limit what or how ICE can and can't dress. But in terms of that, seeing committee action or getting the support of Republicans, I mean, there's just no shot.
Yeah. And now that I think about it, too, I mean, DHS has not been taken up yet by the full House, but you could see potentially maybe some amendments being offered by Dems. But again, we wouldn't
expect rule out of order.
That. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for that update as well. Just a couple questions. Has there been any reactions at the state level on the potential use of some of the federal facilities in California, whether it's Alcatraz or the federal correctional facilities for detention centers? Because I know there was a demonstration over the weekend at the one in Dublin. Has there been any reactions from our state legislators about that?
As of right now, I haven't heard of any reactions of the legislature, but I'm happy also to address and include to our report, Supervisor.
Okay, that's helpful. I didn't quite get what you were talking about. I guess I need some clarification. When are we due for the redistricting and why is the governor having this conversation at this point?
Yes, so that was a response from Governor Newsom after Texas. They were trying to play with a new redistricting to have a more Republican candidates, right? As a response to that tentative, Governor Newsom said that California should also do a redistricting in California to support the Democratic Party. So that's what is happening right now. What again, Governor Newsom is saying is that if it's in Texas, they are doing that to support the Republican Party. In California, we should do also to increase the seats for the Democratic Party.
Okay,
yeah,
that's helpful.
I would just add, because there's such a slim majority in the House, this has been kind of a priority for President Trump. And so he's asked Texas to hold a special session. I think they've already decided that they will. in order to create a few more Republican seats. And so it's as a result of that, right? That, and even so, California is talking about it, New York may be talking about it, but there are a few states that are potentially thinking about a special session to deal with redistricting.
And redistricting typically happens at the conclusion of the 10-year census.
Yes.
Highly irregular for there to be a redrawing of the maps in the middle of the 10-year census, which is, you know, 2025. So we're in the middle of these presumably new maps. So it's a very aggressive strategy on the part of Republicans in Texas and potentially other states to redraw their maps in the middle of this 10-year cycle, which is forcing, or I guess encouraging, you know, the governor to bypass potentially the bipartisan redistricting commission, and then having potentially the legislature override the current map and then drawing new maps that would significantly benefit the Democratic Party. There's been a couple maps that have been sort of floating around the internet and on Twitter where Democrats would potentially be competitive in all but three districts, where Republicans would basically get pushed out to the desert with a couple purple districts, such as Ken Calvert's would likely be a purple district for the 41st congressional district. LA, you know, Young Kim would probably be pushed out. LaMalfa in the north, representing California 1, he would be taken over by DeSaulnier's district and others. So there's a potential that they go this route. Again, if Texas is successful in redistricting their seats, you know, there are a number of democratically controlled seats that could be heavily gerrymandered in that state, eliminating members that were just elected, you know, in seats that are D plus 20. Julie Johnson, for instance, has a D plus 20 district. She was just elected last year, and she could potentially get redistricted out. So that could potentially mean Republican House being kept in a midterm election, which is highly unusual given the trends over the past, I mean, like 50, 60 years. Conversations in New York are less fruitful than that of California. However, Illinois is also considering potentially doing a significant redistricting, as is Minnesota.
Okay, thank you. So I guess you could potentially see more benefits in terms of gaining some Democratic seats in California with 43 out of the 52 than in some of the other states. So thank you for that clarification. Are there any public comments on our state legislative update?
I have no speakers for item 2.
Thank you. We have a request from our social services agency to support and advance AB 607 by Rodriguez. It's a CalWORKs home visiting program to extend that for 3 years. Do we have concurrence to advance this to the full board for support? We do. Do we have any comments on that item?
No speakers.
Do we have any public comments on items that are not on today's agenda?
I have no speakers for public comment.
Can those online identify themselves so we can thank you for your participation?
Elvi Quiroga, Alameda County Treasurer, Tax Collector's Office.
Alexis Chetier with Cardea Health.
Good afternoon, Eileen Ng with Alameda County Health.
Thank you all for your participation and your updates. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.